As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, Chelsea clip Magpies wins in Monday night thriller. Cole Palmer makes his case to Gareth Southgate. Conor Gallagher's still out there running his torn socks off. And there's double cup success for the women's team. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. And it's a very warm welcome along with you a day later for obvious reasons than we normally would be, listener, but good to have you on board. You're not alone. I'm joined today by two of The Athletic's finest. Good morning, Liam Toomey.
Good morning.
And Dominic Fifield's back with us too. You all right, Dom?
Yeah, I'm a bit thrown by the fact that Liam didn't come back with some quip. He usually comes back with a quip.
Yeah, me too. That was really quite off-putting. He's saving it though, I think, for premature adjudications. Liam, what have you got for me?
So, Dune 2 is the best movie I've seen in the cinema since Dune Part 1. It's the first movie I've seen in the cinema since Dune Part 1. For those who don't have a clue what I'm going on about, I went to the cinema last night while the Chelsea game was on. I did watch the Chelsea game after I got home, so I'm not completely phoning this podcast episode in. But I naively assumed when the movie was over that I'd witnessed all the chaotic spectacle I could have wished for in one evening. But then, yeah, Chelsea Newcastle filled me up again.
Talk to me about the psychology of this decision then. Is it because it was a mid-table Monday matchup? Are you still hurting from Brentford and the Carabao Cup final? Did you feel that you just needed to disassociate from Chelsea for a while?
I'm really bad at organising my life, Matt, at scheduling things. And so part of it initially was an innocent double booking, but it was also a product of, I'm sure you know this as well, once you get to a point in your life where you and your friends are married with kids, even getting one person to be free to go to the cinema with you is quite a big event. So yeah, that was the only day that we could do. And as Simon was covering the game, I felt like I could watch it afterwards.
Well, you thought we were done with the movie tie-ins in Chelsea. Now that Argyle's not available in cinemas anymore, if Dune 2 would like to sponsor the pod, they're more than welcome. Mine was going to be looking forward to seeing Adam Sandler walk off with the Oscar for Best Actor for his starring role in Argyle 2 next year after his arrival at Stamford Bridge on Monday night, which, I don't know, sort of unexpected, maybe not these days.
Matt, I just realised in terms of like gimmicky movie tie-ins to the Stamford Bridge match day experience. You know, when the tunnel comes out at half-time, when it extends out onto the pitch, just make that a sandworm. It's a natural.
I don't like the way this is going. Your copy becomes littered with references to Dune, to worms and all that business, and you're in trouble, Liam Toomey.
That is Liam's editor speaking. Dom, help save the start of the pod because people are switching off in droves at the moment. Say something about the football game
quickly. I'll go with Cole Palmer to start England's game against Serbia in Gelsenkirchen on the 16th of June, with Phil Foden still attempting to regain match fitness after tweaking a thigh muscle in the Champions League final.
All right, that's a hot topic. My reserve one was going to be Gareth Southgate was on hand last night because he wanted to watch Newcastle at close quarters before doing a job swap with Eddie Howe in the summer. Let's hope that that's not the case. All right, let's get to the match then.
Jackson providing a way out. Palmer forward, Gallagher as well. Jackson to Gallagher. Mudryk arrives, Mudryk through, and Mudryk scores! Chelsea have a two-goal cushion.
Chelsea 3, Newcastle United 2, then a real treat of a Monday night matchup with Jackson, Palmer and Mudryk all scoring excellent goals. Chelsea defending naively. And Jason Tindall standing on the touchline with that standard issue look of a man who's just realised he was supposed to pick up his mother-in-law from the train station 4 hours ago. Seriously, next time you watch a Newcastle game, just look at Jason Tindall. He always looks alarmed. I don't quite understand it, but maybe he had cause. Yeah, Dom, I thought the atmosphere in the stadium was electric, like as good as it's been at Stamford Bridge, maybe since Dortmund last year. Did that come through on the telly at all? It didn't feel like a match between the 10th and 11th best teams in the Premier League.
It did. I mean, I'll not lie. I didn't sit there thinking, wow, that sounds incredible tonight. It's only different to previous ones particularly. But I do think that when it helps when you've got a very vociferous away support like Newcastle bring, and you can bounce off that. And the early goal probably helped generate a bit of atmosphere as well for Chelsea and convince the home support to get properly behind them. Incidentally, I am old enough to have seen Dune, the original, at the cinema in 1984, which is more of my hot take of today. Sorry. But yeah, no, it did sound good. It was a good crackling atmosphere. It was just nice to hear the supporters galvanised and excited by what they were seeing out on the pitch, as opposed to the sort of disaffection they have with the way things are going off the field.
Especially because, Liam, the start to the game didn't pan out certainly how I was expecting it. I thought from what we've seen in Newcastle in recent weeks, they'd kind of let Chelsea have the ball and then try and counter. Instead, they were all over Chelsea in the early periods, and they did that really interesting press thing, which gave Petrovic and co. the jitters, where they put the three players basically holding hands across the edge of the penalty area. And that kind of worked, didn't it? For the first period of the game, despite Chelsea's breakaway goal, Newcastle were the better team.
Yeah, I think part of it was tactics and part of it was psychology from Eddie Howe. I think it's, you know, this is a stadium that could turn. This is a team that could be nervy. Let's find out just how nervy they are and be as aggressive as possible in the first 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, this is how little fear that Chelsea inspire in opponents these days. They come and position three players on the edge of the penalty area ready to press from goal kicks. It was an interesting gambit from Newcastle, and I thought it was an effective one. Chelsea never, ever looked convincing playing out from the back, because it's not even just that they're committed to doing it regardless of the pressure. It's that they do it really, really slowly. And they draw multiple opponents onto them. I know part of that is the idea, but it feels like they back themselves maybe more than they should. And it ends up in some horrible, horrible turnovers. I guess the flip side and what Pochettino would point to is that whenever they did beat that Newcastle press, they were basically in in that first half. And it was just a really chaotic game, I felt, because of that, because of Newcastle's aggressive approach, because of Chelsea's commitment to playing that way. There were very few dead moments in the game. It always felt like one team had an advantage going forward over the other, and it almost felt like a Bundesliga game that was existing in a constant state of transition, which I guess ultimately suited Chelsea's attacking players.
I would agree with that in terms of the chaos, and definitely Newcastle's tactics contributed to that. But I didn't see it as a completely aggressive approach. I thought they were very aggressive in the top third, but then they sort of forgot about midfield and they had a sort of low block behind that, which allowed, when Chelsea, as Liam says, when Chelsea broke through the press, they basically had the freedom of Stamford Bridge to advance the ball upfield. And that's how the first goal came about. There was a lack of any kind of Newcastle presence in the midfield. Guimaraes was completely off it, which was surprising considering, you know, what a player he is. And I thought Longstaff and Willock weren't particularly effective either. It's the chaos was almost born of the brittle confidence of both teams, really. It just sort of, you know, Chelsea should have been in the ascendancy after scoring the goal, but actually Newcastle dominated the last 20 minutes of the first half, absolutely dominated it. And then, but they still didn't look as if they were going to score a goal until Chelsea just went completely loopy and just decided they were going to just surrender possession about four or five times in a row until Newcastle scored. And then, okay, fine, now that they scored, we can compose ourselves again and come back out after the break. It was completely odd. And Newcastle
Malo Gusto
that.
Just booting the ball up in the air and chasing
it.
Surreal.
It was like watching bad FIFA. It was just really odd. But it was the same second half. Newcastle were capable of doing exactly the same thing in the build up to Chelsea's second goal. It's almost like they're having that sort of brain lapses, brain fades, and suddenly sort of inviting pressure onto them, and Chelsea took advantage. And in those moments, I guess it's the best players on the pitch prevail, and the best player on the pitch yesterday was Cole Palmer by a country mile.
Mm. Yeah, on the defending, Paul got in touch wanting to know what causes these episodes of collective lunacy like before the first Newcastle goal. Seems that when we concede, it's not just one error, but multiple errors over extended periods of time. I think it comes back to an experience issue, really, Paul. The problem that Chelsea got is that they've got two experienced players. One of them doesn't speak English and the other one doesn't seem to be that focused on helping out his teammates. Let's talk about the first goal, though, Dom, because you mentioned Cole Palmer. Obviously, it's his shot which is diverted in really cleverly by Nicholas Jackson, and he's the subject of Simon's post-match piece. Do you agree with Simon's assertion that he has now justified his price tag at Chelsea? Three goals in as many games for the Senegalese, up to 12 for the season.
I think that's a good return for a player that has missed a lot of good chances as well. And a player that you look at and think, well, there's potential there to get better. And then in the years to come, those good chances may well be taken. And then you're looking at a 25-goal striker, and then you really are laughing at the fee that was paid. Nicholas Jackson sort of personifies the project, doesn't he? I mean, he's raw. He's not the finished article. He has to get better if the whole thing is going to work, if the collective is going to work. And he has quietly, three of those goals were scored against Tottenham when Tottenham decided to play a high line in the opposition half, but he still had to take them. And I think he's demonstrated enough in terms of his first season in English football, not a natural striker, not somebody that arrived here as a number nine who's been tearing it up across Europe for years. He's actually contributed a decent amount of goals. And there are a lot of teams in that division who would like a double-figure goal scorer, somebody who's going to contribute that many. He will get better, I'm sure, with good coaching, etc. as well. So next year, Chelsea might be looking at a 15, 16, 17-goal striker, and then beyond that, even better. So, yeah, he's had comical moments, but he wasn't the finished article. We have to give him those and hope that he continues his development.
Yeah, it's not outrageous to make the comparison with Didier Drogba. No, I think both got 15 on their back. Drogba got, 16 goals in his first season?
He's been doing the little things all season. The goals are one aspect. And as Dom says, I think his goal return is perfectly respectable for a young, relatively unpolished striker. But the thing that's always intrigued me about him from the moment I first saw him in the US were the little layoffs, the little flicks around the corner, the little bits of link-up play with wingers, with midfield runners, his awareness of his teammates and the way he's able to lead the line. Not in the most physical way. Obviously, he hasn't got that kind of frame yet. But I think he has improved even in the course of this season at using his body. And he works really hard running the channels, leads the press. But it's those little moments of ingenuity that can open up a defence where you can play a little wall pass off him, or he can flick the ball round the corner back to you in the manner that Olivier Giroud used to do. And I made that comparison quite early with Jackson. And in a lot of other ways, he's a very different player, but I think he's the best at that Chelsea have had since Giroud. And you can see Chelsea's other attackers really like playing with him because he's not a selfish player, apart from when he was running through in the last minute against Tottenham and could have passed to Modric. And had a hat trick on the table.
Nah.
I'll forgive him for that
understood
one.
the decision making at that particular time, didn't we?
But yeah, he's an unselfish guy, I think, on the pitch. And he makes teammates better. He makes an attack better. I don't think he takes a lot off the table, unlike some of the raw players that Chelsea are fielding at the moment. And I think he adds a lot. The thing that you have to live with at the moment is the erratic finishing, but he's always getting into the position. Simon made the comparison in his piece. You know, missing a lot of big chances is not as bad a thing as you think it is. It's actually the kind of hallmark of a successful striker, because it's a numbers game. It's a volume game. You have to get a certain number of chances to be able to get a decent goal return. The best strikers are not the ones who score every time. They're the ones who have short memories of the chances they miss. And I think if he can develop that, he's already shown signs of it, but if he can get better at that, then he can become better at delivering in the big moments, which is what Chelsea really need.
Talking of short memories, we shouldn't forget that there was a lot of scepticism about Drogba in that first season at Chelsea. I mean, people aside from the, you know, propensity to go to ground and the diving allegations, the finishing came into it as well. People weren't convinced. He'd come with a big reputation from Marseille, had a good season there, but that was really one of the few prolific seasons he'd had as a professional footballer. Similar to Nicholas Jackson, he had a burst of goals for Villarreal last season. He's come here, he just needs refining a bit. I'm not going to say he's going to become the next Didier Drogba, but Chelsea have been sort of striving for this perfect number nine for really since Drogba, Costa in their pomp. Chelsea have a dreadful record of signing number nines that they think are the finished article. They never work. They very, very, very rarely work.
The best number nine they've had since Costa is Tammy Abraham.
Yeah, there you go. And he wasn't the finished article either, was he? So there's a logic to sticking with Nicholas Jackson and making his game better and hopefully reaping the rewards.
Yeah, and he's improving. Malo Gusto's improving. I'd say even Conor Gallagher's improving, and probably worth pointing out that Maurizio Pochettino and his staff deserve some credit for developing these players. But we're all here, really, Dom, for the Cole Palmer loving. Pick your favourite stat to illustrate how good he is. This one from Up to Joe's nice. 5-5, as well as scoring in 5 successive Premier League starts at Stamford Bridge, Cole Palmer has both scored and assisted in 5 different Premier League games this season. More than any player. I mean, it was even further enhanced, wasn't it, his England credentials with the fact that Anthony Gordon went off so early in the game. But it's been an incredibly successful transfer so far. You think he barely would have kicked a ball for Manchester City, would he? He certainly wouldn't have been starting games in the way that he has been for Chelsea and quickly become one of, if not the most important players in the team. It's been an incredible season for him. And you think he does get certainly on the plane and maybe into Gareth Southgate's thinking for a starting place in the summer?
I do think Phil Foden is a problem for him. We shouldn't underestimate him. He's playing out of his skin at the moment as well. But Palmer is, as you say, his progress this season has been remarkable. His adaptation to life at Chelsea, having enjoyed the high life at Manchester City. Okay, he wasn't involved every week. He was cameos more than anything else. But he was surrounded by the best players in the country. So he would have, even coming to Chelsea, was a step down into mid-table, and he's just lit the place up. He's illuminated it. He is. I love everything about his attitude as well, on the pitch and off the pitch. I think it's summed up in he has this sort of matter of factness about it all. I nutmegged him and went through him and I put the shot through his legs. Yeah, of course I did. That's what I do. That sort of comes naturally to me. It's instinctive. His post-match interview, you know, you might describe it as painful if you were the interviewer, because the answers were so abrupt and to the point, but it just sums him up. He's just like, he doesn't see the fuss. This isn't exceptional for him. This is just what he does. He can take it round whoever the opponent is, whether that be a Manchester City player, whether that be a Newcastle player. He can cut inside. He has that self-belief, that confidence. He's going to put it in that corner. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll just do that. And this goal was superb. The vision, just sensing that the goalkeeper had gone the wrong way, and that as soon as the defender's legs were wide enough apart for him to smash that shot through, It was pinpoint. It was precise. It was fantastic. And yeah, everything about him. He's just so, look, that might have been Michael Olise. Olise would, if he'd been fit for Chelsea this season, would have had a similar effect. He's a similar, very similar type of player. But Chelsea have got a real gem here. He's just fantastic to watch. So entertaining and a breath of fresh air.
Feels like England's golden generation central midfield problem has just been transposed to the right wing. Can Saka, Foden, Palmer all play together? Oh, well, I guess you can add Bellingham to that if they're all drifting into the number 10 spot as well.
Yeah. Palmer's versatility might help him there, though, Liam, right? Because he doesn't always play on the right for Chelsea, does he? He often moves about during the game. So that's something that's going to be of a benefit to him internationally.
Yeah, it can help, but you still look at it and think him and Foden play in a lot of the same areas of the pitch. Like you can see why City were, prepared to let Palmer go, or felt that they couldn't give the minutes to Palmer that he wanted with Foden ahead of him, because Foden, you would have to say at this point in time, is just that bit better. He's been one of the best players in the world this season. And yeah, they are very similar. Although they accomplish it in different styles, they operate in the same areas and do some of the same things for a team. You could even play Palmer as the pressing nine for England, although Harry Kane might have something to say about that. So yeah, good problems for Gareth Southgate, but I don't see how, looking at the way Palmer's played this season, I know he hasn't been in many squads yet, but Southgate always keeps a lot of tabs on the lower age group teams, and Palmer's been a superstar for the under 21s. I don't see how Palmer isn't in the squad for the Euros on current form, because he's been one of the outstanding players in the Premier League, regardless of nationality.
You think he's nailed on for Chelsea Player of the Year as well. He's got to be in the running for Young Player of the Year as well. Let's get to some tweets then. Max says, this game managed to perfectly encapsulate Chelsea under Poch. Woeful finishing and attacking play from Sterling, magic from Palmer, and gusto terrorising Burn and co. High energy pressing and defending, and Sunday league mistakes lead to goals. Dr. Doolittle, I really think we need to be aiming for sixth spot. We have a very favourable run of fixtures to end this season, whereas the teams above us, especially United, have trickier opponents. The United game at the Bridge is huge. Peter says, great to see the team grow into the second half and not fold after the second Newcastle goal. Palmer and Gusto, shining lights as per, but thought Cucurella put in an impressive showing, second goal aside, after so long out. Here's a great question, Liam, that comes to us from Dai Jinjo. I think that's how you say it. Are we the best bad team or the worst good team?
It's eye of the beholder when you're mid-table, isn't it? It depends what side of the bed you wake up on, how optimistic you're feeling. It kind of feels like Chelsea and Newcastle are both in that boat. What Dom said earlier about these being two of the less confident teams in the league, you could really feel that. They were both very vulnerable. I'd say these are two of the more injured, tired teams as well in the league, and you could really feel that in the second half when the game became even more stretched, and there seemed to be everyone on the pitch just seemed to be blowing as they were running up and down. I don't think Chelsea are consistent enough to be called any definition of a good team. I think they can look a good team for stretches of a game, but no more than that, because they're never in control for very long. And some of those issues I referred to in my piece analysing the defensive record this year, they're on course to concede the most goals that any Chelsea team has conceded in a league season since 1991. And that was before the Newcastle game. Conceding twice against them hasn't really helped that average. So they've got real problems with the balance of this team, with controlling opponents in transition, the quality of the chances that they give up. And yes, they do get forward in numbers. They do create chances. They have a really exciting, thrilling brain to watch in Cole Palmer, but they're just as vulnerable as they are exciting. And at any stage of a game, you feel like they're just as likely to concede as to score.
Summed up by gusto, isn't it? Gusto, absolutely wonderful going forward. I mean, a force of nature, up and down. Poor Dan Burn must be wondering what hit him last night still. But defensively, my word. I mean, he is capable of some of the most basic errors out there. It makes for, as a neutral, it makes for unbelievably good watch. I mean, it's fantastic, the unpredictability of it all. Actually, it is predictable because you know something disastrous is about to happen at any point. But it's great fun. I mean, it's great fun. I know Chelsea fans won't agree with that because they want to see progress. And I think there is progress. But, you know, for every three steps forward, it's occasionally two steps back.
Yeah, Tristan thinks there's progress too. Says, I feel like there's been a steady upward trend, even if results haven't fully shown that. Scoring early does a lot for a team, and Mudryk just finds way to be impactful every third appearance, and I don't hate it. This was perfect for Mykhailo Mudryk, wasn't it, Liam, to come on against a weary and tiring defence. But we often talk about him doing his best stuff when he doesn't have to think about it. He had plenty of time to think about that goal. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it was really well taken. Again, it felt like it was the kind of thinking that I think is right up Mudryk Street at this point, which is very instinctive. You know, the ball, he made an instinctive decision to take the ball off Gallagher. It wasn't a pass.
Gallagher's shock is wonderful, though, isn't it? Look at his face. What the hell just happened?
And then he takes that touch and Fabian Schär's in front of him. So instinctively, oh, I'll just nick it through his legs. And of course, because he's Mudryk and he's got excellent technical ability, he's able to do that. And then the goalkeeper's upon him, so instinctively he takes it around him and he's good enough to do that. And then it's just the finish. So he didn't have to stop and think or plan out any of those steps. And that's when it feels like, you know, Mudryk can maybe have more of an impact. It helps when he comes into a game like that one, when Newcastle were really pushing, Chelsea were pushing. Neither team seemed remotely capable of killing the game for even 2 minutes. So there were just so many opportunities for him to let those legs run in transition. And yeah, he got a nice goal. And I think you'd have to say about Chelsea as a whole, this applies to Mudryk, but it applies to the team. For all their flaws, they do keep going. And that there is clearly a collective spirit in this group that is fostered between them, but clearly fostered by Pochettino as well. They play for each other. They play for him. They make a lot of mistakes, but they do good things as well. And they have had opportunities. I mean, they had opportunities in this game. They had opportunities against Brentford when the crowd had turned as well to let their heads drop and just kind of give up on it. And they don't do that very often. And I think that's to their credit. And I think that's to Pochettino's credit. While you can level a lot of criticisms at him for maybe the way this team is set up and at individual players for the way they perform from week to week, I think there is something real being built here in terms of the spirit of the group.
And this ridiculous record continues. Chelsea haven't lost a Premier League home fixture in the month of March since 2001. That's now 38 games. That's 23 years. That is absolutely ridiculous. In 2017
March
and 2018...
March champions, you'll never sing that.
March madness, indeed. 2017 and 2018. I saw this stat yesterday and I didn't believe it, so I checked it. 2017, 2018, they lost at home on the 1st of April on both of those years. But something about March, which, yeah, Chelsea are allergic to losing to. The big question...
It helps there's a big international break in March every year, surely.
Well, yes, that may be. But it's just
and the FA Cup.
That they then lose in the first game in April. So we're on 39 points. West Ham are in seventh. They've got 43. Chelsea got a game in hand on them. What do you think, Dom? Can Chelsea qualify for European football through the Premier League?
Well, West Ham are in crisis, aren't they? Don't their fans want David Moyes out? Brighton have had a really dodgy run and were celebrating wildly after beating Nottingham Forest 1-0 at the weekend, as if that's European Championships, here we come. Wolves are a problem. Newcastle are on the slide. So actually, yeah, Chelsea shouldn't have any problem at all, really, on that basis. No, look, it's tight and it's impossible to predict because, I mean, the game in hand is against Tottenham. I mean, God knows what happens in that one, given the last meeting.
Still got to find a date for Arsenal as well.
Yeah, and that'll probably be in the last week of the season, which, you know, with all the implications of that in terms of Arsenal's title pursuit.
Get Eden Hazard back.
Yeah.
Be the party pooper.
But we can't say anything because we just don't know what Chelsea are going to, how they're going to perform next week. I mean, if they perform like they did at Brentford for long periods, then they might struggle to beat Leicester at the weekend in the FA Cup. But if they perform like they did for periods against Newcastle or you know, even in the Carabao Cup final, then yeah, Europe, here we come. But it's, well, the other thing to add is, and I know Liam's already written this piece in the context of the Carabao Cup final, but do they even want to qualify for Europe for the Conference League? I'll hand the floor over to Liam on that one to explain, but it's a valid question.
Well, I mean, I can tell you with confidence that the Chelsea journalists want Chelsea to qualify for Europe again. Yeah. There are some excellent away trips in the Conference League that I would love to sample if the Athletic are willing to pay for them. Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated equation that we don't know 100% of without seeing Chelsea's current accounts. But of course, they announced another pre-tax loss of 90.1 million in their latest financial results up to June 2023. We expect that picture to be worse for them in the next set of accounts because they won't have Champions League revenue to bolster and offset all the spending that they did on players. And the Conference League doesn't give you much financially. You get 16 million if you win the whole thing, as West Ham did. So the risk versus reward, and getting into Europe, as I wrote a couple of weeks ago, subjects you to UEFA's FSR, which is...
We need like, another one
like,
of those.
Like, like PSR with added teeth. So you can lose significantly less money, essentially, than you can from the Premier League's 105 million over 3 years. Chelsea insist that they will be fine, complying with whatever financial rules they are applicable to them next season. But a lot of people outside Chelsea remain to be convinced. So, yeah, Conference League could introduce some interesting questions for the Chelsea ownership.
Get Michael Emanalo on the phone. Let's get Marcus Bettinelli shipped out to the Saudi Pro League for £50 million or something. Certainly worked last summer, didn't it? All right, next up for the chaps is the FA Cup quarterfinal against Leicester on Sunday. We'll preview that on Thursday.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Sagawa couldn't collect the pass, Cuthbert won it back. This is Myra Ramirez. Ciankovic one side, this is Lauren James. It's James! She squeezed it past Keating. And Chelsea take an early lead. Inside 10 minutes, Lauren James. And it's the Blues who strike first in the semi-final.
Aggie Beaver-Jones still going, Kat Macario's there! And it's two goals in two games for Chelsea. Her first FA Cup goal for the Blues.
Well, it's been quite the time for the women's team since we last spoke. On Thursday night, they booked their place in the League Cup final at the end of this month. They'll play Arsenal at Molineux on the 31st, that courtesy of a 1-0 win at Manchester City. And on Sunday, Emma Hayes' team set up an FA Cup semi-final away at Manchester United next month after edging out Everton on Merseyside. Don't take my word for it, though. Here's Jessie Parker-Humphreys to give some actual insight.
So Chelsea win two knockout matches in a week, 1-0 win versus Manchester City to reach Continental Cup final, followed up on Sunday by a 1-0 win over Everton to reach the FA Cup semi-final. Neither game was pretty, I think it's fair to say. Obviously, going into the City game, Chelsea hadn't beaten City yet this season, and I think there was a real mental need to prove that they could get a win against one of the top teams in England, obviously with Arsenal coming up this week. Lauren James's deflected goal gave Chelsea the win there in what was, I think, a really interesting out-possession approach from Emma Hayes that worked well for long periods of time. The big issue that came from the City game is that Myra Ramirez went off with an injury. It looked like it might just have been precautionary. Ramirez and later on Wrighton were taken off as soon as they went down. I think as much as Chelsea wanted the win over City, there was a feeling that the Continental Cup isn't their priority this season, perhaps understandably. Ramirez then wasn't in the squad for the Everton game. Hayes saying that they took the decision just to leave her at home, potentially as much to rest her as opposed to because she was injured. But obviously with Hayes, we know that she doesn't always like to make things as clear as possible, and especially with the Arsenal game coming up, I think there was a real sense of wanting to keep the cards close to her chest on that one. There was another injury from that Everton game as well, another early injury with Natalie Bjorn having to go off too. So that's another big injury concern for Chelsea. And again, I think with both of those early substitutions in the City game and the Everton game, you could tell it really disrupted Chelsea. In the Everton game, Hayes had made a lot of changes. It was a really rotated team. But as soon as Bjorn went off, everything had to shift again. Jess Carter was at left back. She had to move back to centre back. Neve Charles was hoping to get a rest and she was immediately on to play at left back. And, you know, Everton did have some good chances, but Chelsea brought the cavalry on in the second half. And Katerina Macario got her second goal for the club, this time just 3 minutes after coming off the bench. So as much as there's been sort of injury doom and gloom over the past couple of months hanging over Chelsea, Macario is a real obvious positive there. I think to see her come back in the form that she's clearly in, to be able to physically compete with the teams and to show that she's still got her touch in front of goal, I think that's a big mental boost. A great assist from Aggie Beaver-Jones for the goal. She also obviously got the assist for Macario's goal against Leicester. So nice to see a new relationship building there between those two. Ultimately, I think Chelsea will feel in both games, it's knockout football. You just want to win. You want to move on to the next stage. They'll go away to United in the FA Cup semi-final. That game will be played in the middle of April. And their run of ridiculous games in March will continue on Friday when Arsenal arrive at the Bridge.
Thanks to Jesse. It is the massive matchup in the WSL next for the girls as Arsenal visit Stamford Bridge on Friday night. More than 30,000 tickets have been sold for that one so far.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, it has been a winning weekend for Chelsea. Fitting, given that it was the club's 190th birthday on Sunday. On Friday, the under-21s hammered Newcastle 7-1 in PL2. My boy Ronnie Stutter and Leo Castledine both scored twice, with Zane Silcott-Jubri, Diego Moreira and Dujuan Richards also on target. And the under-18s kept up their bid to win the PL South title thanks to Danelle McNeely's second-half penalty, which was enough to earn 3 points at Crystal Palace. That's just about going to do us for today. Liam, is there anything that Athletic subscribers should be looking out for dropping from you on the site in the near future?
Well, I'm about to talk to my editor, who I believe is on this podcast, about plans for this week. This week could have looked very different if Chelsea had lost in terms of the calls we might have had to make and things we might have been chasing. But as it is, hopefully a chance to look at more football focused matters on the pitch. In the meantime, I would advise readers who haven't seen it yet to check out the piece that we ran on Monday ahead of the game, looking at Chelsea's defensive issues, because I think it's every bit as relevant now as it was before that Newcastle game, based on what we saw.
Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. Anything on the site that you would steer people towards, Dom?
I'll always push people towards the Derby Days series if they fancy a bit of history of some of the biggest rivalries across Europe. We did Slavia versus Sparta Prague last week, and we're sending Oliver Kay to Poland this weekend to watch, oh dear, this is where my pronunciation comes into problems, Ruch Chorchow versus Górnik Zabrze.
Szabsza,
there you go. Thank you. You probably commentated on all these teams in the Europa Conference League, haven't you?
Yeah, I had a wee spell as the commentator for the Ekstraklasa. Never mind the Europa Conference League. Been a varied and middle-of-the-road career that I've enjoyed. We will be back on Thursday looking ahead to Leicester and the Arsenal game in the WSL as well. Before that, if you want to follow us on Twitter, now known as X, it is at SO Cobham Pod, and you can leave us a nice review if you are so inclined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. It would help us out a lot. Thanks to Liam, thanks to Dom, thanks to Jesse, thanks to Lucy, and thanks to you for joining us today. Back on Thursday. Bye for now.
The Athletic.